You're listening to The Whole Truth, a Resources Rising Stars podcast.
Hello and welcome to an episode of The Whole Truth podcast with a difference. I'm Paul Armstrong. I recently attended a fascinating lunch in Adelaide known as the Mine Makers and Winemakers Lunch. At this lunch, Bell Direct market analyst Grady Wolfe had a great fireside chat with legendary AFL superstar Chris Judd. Chris really opened up about his life in football. He gave some fascinating insights into his new career as a fund manager, and he shared a few thoughts on what he thinks are the secret to successful investing. One of these will take you by surprise. He also gave some insights into what he believes is the prospects for his old team, the West Coast Eagles, this season. They may surprise you too. Listeners won't get to enjoy the first-class wine that was being downed by lunch guests as Chris and Grady spoke, but you will get some valuable insights from a man who is determined to excel in the markets in the same way he did on the footy field.
Chris Judd, former AFL star and now turned fund manager. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
It is awesome. So can we start with your footy career and head straight into transitions?
Ready to be grilled.
Yeah, literally. Well, your footy career was really long. And did you trade shares whilst playing footy, or was it simply a full footy focus and now a full share focus?
No, look, I did. I was always obsessed with being self-sufficient. So even when I was playing football, I wouldn't let the property steward take my boots to the ground or shorts to the ground, socks. They were insistent they had to take the jumper to the ground, but everything else I took, whereas the other players, their boots would be stored with him and he'd take them into state. So I was always obsessed with if things were going to go wrong, it was going to be because of me.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately led to me living through the greatest resources boom of all time in WA and investing with a Melbourne-based broker and not buying any stocks that were 10Xing. So I always invested my own money. In my early 20s, that looked like buying ANZ and BHP and stocks where I just had no edge in. And then when I was 28, I met the founder of Euroz, and he really taught me how to invest in small and micro cap companies. And what that really means to me is learning how to sell. You know, I've always had the view in property, it's really about the buying. If you buy property well, you don't really need to sell it. Maybe with some of the tax changes in Melbourne, that's no longer true. But stocks for me, particularly microcap stocks, is all about the selling. That's where the skill is. It's easy to know when you think good time to buy is, but the skill is in the selling. So learned how to do that as a 28-year-old, started making some money, worked for a venture capital firm after football as an analyst. Venture capital investing's hard. In Australia, the addressable market's small. Every founder you meet thinks they're the next Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And after 18 months, I just felt that wasn't for me. And started trading listed equities full time and eventually found myself into funds management.
Absolutely. Now, what was the first stock you ever bought? And did you make money or lose money?
I did. I made money purely out of good luck. I got $2,500 when I was 16 from the AIS, being part of a junior footballing program. I walked down the street with the old man and bought a share magazine. And I bought, it was a toss up between AWA, which is a small electrics manufacturer, or Woolworths, which Woolworths would have been a bloody good investment. But AWA doubled. It was a 50 cent stock that doubled and I don't think was even a business a few years later. So that was the first stock I bought. So better be lucky than smart. My old man is not interested in money or he's a smart guy, but just neither him nor my mum are financially literate. But my grandfather loves his stock. So I think there was something that skipped a generation and it's always been a real interest.
Absolutely. I think talking on Woolies, everyone, it got 2 buy ratings yesterday on the call from myself and Howard Coleman. So if you want to watch that episode, a little plug there for anyone who's interested in Woolies at the moment. So talking about information, when you're investing in stocks, you do need to have some research and some background information before obviously hitting the buy button. Where do you get your information from?
Yeah, most of the stuff I look at is macroeconomic research. So I spend a lot of money on it. It's overseas based. I really like to be reading stuff that people I'm competing with aren't. So I don't want to be reading the same stuff as the people I'm buying and selling shares with.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned yesterday, for those who are there, our fund starts with really top-down economic macro views. So we have strong views around, you know, long-term secular trends with aging demographic, clean air, currency debasement, a lot of trends which are really common. And then we look to express that through long-only equities.
Absolutely. So with your footy profile you built over the years that you're in footy, does that help you in the share game at all?
I mean, I think there are lessons around high performance and getting outsized returns by doing things differently. You know, you notice each team, generally who wins a flag each year, they do something differently before the rest of the competition. And you'll find a year later all the other teams are doing it and that advantage is gone. So think of Collingwood with their really aggressive ball movement. Think of Richmond with their messy game style. You know, and that's no different to investing. The outperformance belongs to people that do things differently, but that also means they're the outliers at the top of the stack and at the bottom.
Yeah.
So that crosses over. I think the fund's been an interesting one. I find access really easy because of football, but it's amazing how many times I walk in the door and people say, "Oh, you're the footballer. How can you invest money?" So, you know, it was 9 years ago since I played my last game. So it takes a little bit of a while for people to work at. You might be able to have more than one skill set throughout your life. But I think over time, the numbers are the numbers.
Do you find anyone associates a stigma in a way to you being a footballer and they're going, "Oh, are you just in shares because of your football career?" Or then you kind of have to prove yourself and say, "No, I actually have the knowledge to be here."
Yeah, I just think, you know, we all use heuristics and generally you associate people with one thing. That's just a more orderly way to group people. Otherwise, if you had to see everyone for the 40 different hats they wear, your mind would be pretty busy. So generally I'll meet people, Chris Judd, footballer.
Yeah.
That's the box I'm going to sit. And over time that can eventually change, but that's where things lie currently.
It's a pretty good profile to have. So what does a day in the life of you look like every day?
Well, it depends. My favourite days are where I get to sit down and read a bucket load of content. But we mix our days between meeting management, you know, compliance meetings, sales and marketing. So investing's not new to me, but the business side of investing is different. And then a bucket load of reading and content consumption. So,
Do you invest in a particular size company, size sectors? Certain areas,
or got a really broad mandate, which is a messy way to market a fund because allocators want you to be a growth partner or value partner, and we're really guided by liquidity.
Yeah,
and liquidity to us isn't how many shares are being traded, but that's central bank liquidity. Mm-hmm. So we look at those models around what's happening with central bank balance sheets, the TGA, which is the US's checking account, and the RRP, which is a reverse repo account, and we feel when liquidity is loose, we're happy to be in smaller cap positions that are naturally liquid. And when liquidity is tight, we want to be in larger cap positions, or if they are small, companies that are producing a bucket load of cash flow.
Absolutely. So would you consider yourself a long-term investor or a short-term investor, or it depends on the...
Well, we've got a saying that a long-term investment is just a short-term investment that's gone wrong. And, and I'm sure other people will be familiar with that. But look, generally we buy things on and we're expecting to hold it for a 2 to 3 year basis, but we're wrapped if we only need to hold it for 2 days and it's moved well beyond what we think it's worth. So, but we're not traders. We've got no skill in short-term trading and we're really conscious of that. So generally, we'd like the portfolio to turn over about 30 or 40% a year.
Yep.
We're a bit higher than that because of when we got going. You've got a lot of capital to allocate and you probably get into some positions you're not in love with as much just because you can't be sitting in cash. But yeah, we would consider ourselves long-term investors, but if the rules change in the market, so do we.
So looking at obviously we're here for mining today, looking at mining companies, do you understand the geology and the assay results and things like that, or are you purely about the management team when looking at different mining companies? How do you look at mining companies when you're investing?
We can see grades and what are good hits, but things around metallurgy we can get caught out with. So generally when we're investing in mining companies, they're actually already producing and producing cash flows and we can model it using that. We don't like to take development risk just because we're not technically skilled and other people in the market have an edge over us. But, you know, our real focus and skill set will be on analysing, you know, what's moving the gold price, why our views are different to other people, where there's nuance and some advantage. And we spend a lot of time thinking about that. But we're generally not in development companies or explorers just because other people can do that better.
Sorry, explorers in the room.
There are always exceptions, don't worry. I mean,
It just gives you a reason to get to production pretty quick, because then Chris will look at you. What mistake have you made as an investor? And what's the mistake you've made and you've found you it's a most common mistake that you make and you go, ah, again?
I think everyone's got personal biases, yeah. And just to be aware of that. So, you know, I reckon we've got a bias towards value in our fund. So yeah. We're attracted to low PE stocks and we're conscious of that. We don't want to have a whole portfolio of companies that play in that space. But the big thing for me is just to be able to be flexible and to make money in different environments. And they're the investors I admire the most. So yeah. Someone like a Stanley Druckenmiller that can change his mind on something when information changes yeah. like that, and he can make his money in an inflationary environment, in a disinflationary environment. They're the guys we aim to be like. We're yeah. clearly not going to be the next Stanley Druckenmiller, unfortunately. But certainly those guys I admire much more than, say, Warren Buffett, who's a brilliant value investor, yeah. but really has a style. Yeah. I'd love to maintain that flexibility. And we've just seen so many crazy things in the world of late. You know, it wasn't long ago we had $18 trillion worth of negative yielding debt, yeah. something many people thought were impossible. We've had a negative oil price.
Yeah.
We've been locked in our homes for 18 months for yeah. people in Melbourne. And when you get this amount of debt in the system, it's generally a time when you do get war and unusual economic events. So yeah. we think it pays to be open to different outcomes
yeah.
And to remain flexible.
Where do you see the opportunities over the next 12 months?
So we think, whilst I mentioned our bias, you know, we do think low PE stocks yeah. are going to have a run here, and we think hard asset stocks are going to as well. I think what's happening with gold is really interesting. You know, gold's meant to be, we have some differing views on perhaps consensus on gold. You know, most people view gold as an inflation hedge. We think you really need to separate monetary inflation to CPI or Main Street inflation. And we saw when inflation was 9.5% in the US, gold was getting crunched. So we think the fact that gold is moving up speaks to some currency debasement coming, and the way it's acted with real yields recently. You know, when yields spike in the US, that's meant to be negative for gold, but that relationship's completely broken down because the US's interest bill is so extensive, and the higher the 10-year goes, the bigger their interest bill goes. So we think that speaks to increased deficit spending, and that's bullish for gold. So I can see that's a bit of a waffle that people are switching off from, but you know, we like gold, we like uranium, we like copper and tin yesterday, but we like aging demographics, so we've got some healthcare stocks. We think 600,000 of net migration to Australia last year is underappreciated, and there's going to be a lot of service companies that are priced like Armageddon's company that are going to benefit from that. There's some of the themes we're exploring.
Absolutely. Well, I think I'll open it up to the floor now. That's all the questions I have. So the grilling is done. We might get a mic roving around if we can. Any questions for Chris? Anyone in the crowd at all? Or you just want to get back to your wine?
Yep.
And you responded to the start of your day with basically work, but do you actually get out of bed and look at Bloomberg, or do you get out of bed and go to the gym?
Funnily enough, I do both. So I get out of bed early and I exercise whilst listening to macroeconomic podcasts. So I feel like kill two birds with the one stone. The exercise is now pretty unimpressive, but I'm an early riser. It's the only time when I don't have kids or a wife squawking at me. And I'll do some gym at our home. I walk our dog and get an hour of content in, and I quite like that because I feel by the time that the squawking happens, I've already got a bit of a picture of what's coming for the day.
Anyone else? Yeah?
Can you come play for the Eagles again?
Look, the very sad thing is I reckon I could maybe get a game still. And that's really not a sign of how well I'm going. That's a sign of something else. So, yeah, they're in a spot, the old mob. they do have a bit of a habit of really bottoming out and getting low picks. Most teams are terrifying of doing that because of what it does culturally. But Eagles have been able to do that historically well. So I actually think that's what will happen. They'll have another round of early picks this year. They'll probably get a priority pick, and they're such a powerful club. They'll still be able to attract a free agent, like a Tim English or whatever. So I think this year will be ugly, and then I think it'll start to get better.
Dockers or Eagles next in line for a flag?
I'll plead the fifth on that.
Carlton?
I refuse to say anything nice about Fremantle. It's just, I don't know, it's just stayed with me from Perth.
And that's our interview done. No, I'm joking. Anyone else? Oh, that is the interview done then. Thank you so much, Chris, for your time today. We've really enjoyed it. Please put your hands together.
You've been listening to The Whole Truth, a Resources Rising Stars podcast, produced by Resource Media, hosted by Paul Armstrong for Reed Corporate. Please note that Reed Corporate does not provide investment advice, and investors should seek personalised advice before making any investment decisions.